Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back into the show. The program, as always, is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Bill Ryder with you here on the show, along with the guys. Thank you to them, to Jim, for letting me do this. It's always a thrill. Adam Hawk, Alvin DeLauro, George Ritt, back in beautiful New York City, helping out Antonio Grillo and the gentleman that produces my show. I have a show here in the evenings, on the East Coast at least, 6 to 10 Eastern, 3 to 7 Pacific. Stuart Kovacs doing his thing. Appreciate all of them very much. Appreciate you listening. 1-800-636-8686. RomeandHeavyTake.com. Jim, of course, on Twitter at Jim Rome, JimRome.com. You can hit me up, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. We got a bunch of calls coming in. We'll get to them in a moment here. 1-800-636-8686. I want to, and I'm going to, plan to, get into some of the criticism of Andrew Luck. It is not my personal perspective, but there are some folks who think it's bonkers. But we just got Bill Belichick's response. I just want to read it to you because Bill Belichick is always wins the moment. Asked about Luck announcing his retirement, this is the response of the head coach, the loquacious talker that is Bill Belichick. Quote, he's a good player. I didn't see that, but I don't really follow them, end quote. Sure, bro. Sure. Oh, who? Adam Luck? Andrew Luck? What's his? Okay, great. Sounds really good. It does. It just keeps coming. If you're in the AFC and if you're in the AFC South, what a boon. For most of us, right? The response from most of us has been shock, exasperation, heartbreak if you're in Indy. But if you're in the AFC, especially if you're the Jags, if you're the Texans, if you're the Titans, you are doing a little jig. You are dancing. Some folks, and my take on this, we've been discussing this for a few hours now. 1-800-636-8686 if you want to join in. My perspective on this is I don't know the details. I don't know if Andrew Luck was about to have it announced he was going to miss some games or a season or was fit and ready to roll. I don't know the makeup of the man, what's important to him, what's going on in his life. I just know he's a grown man. He can make whatever decisions he wants to make, and the obligation of the team is absolute and paramount and true if you're a part of the team. The moment that you retire, and that's the other thing that I want to hit, this, he's got to be a part of the team. He's got to be there for the team. Okay, but in the National Football League, you can get traded. Your allegiance to your team can be zero when they make the decision the moment they make the decision. I know no one's treating Andrew Luck. I get it. I know trades don't happen with any frequency or not any frequency like in the NBA or Major League Baseball. But this idea that he owes everything to the Colts is only true when he's under contract with the Colts. The moment he retires, it's a different deal. Now, last week on the show that I host, I had Steve Berline on before this news broke. I like Steve. Obviously played the game. His perspective is interesting. And I will say this. I'm not going to criticize Andrew Luck. I think it's really silly for media members who don't cover the game to criticize Andrew Luck for pop psychology reasons. It's out there. And fans. But I've been waiting for some of the responses from players, and I'm sure reflect the actual perspective. Steve Berline did that on Twitter. Quote, I am a huge, all caps, huge Andrew Luck fan. Always have been. But this I cannot defend or justify. No scenario where retirement is defensible. To do this to his teammates, organization, fans, and the NFL 2 weeks before the season is just not right. I love the guy, but this will haunt him. And we know that the Colts booed him on his way off the field, which is a bizarre final exit, if that's what it is, for an all-time great. And I'm sure Berline's response reflects some of the guys around the NFL. And I know that the fans who were there for that moment who booed Andrew Luck reflects a lot of people in Indianapolis. But I would respectfully say this to Steve Berline. There is no excuse, there is no scenario that justifies or allows a defense. There might be. What if the news internally was you're going to miss a season and have to rehab? How's he letting his team down there? They have a year's notice. We don't have all the information. It's so amazing to me how much we... And I look, I'll criticize a guy along with the next guy. I got no issue criticizing people where it's appropriate, where it's warranted. On a normal day, filling in for Jim here on the show, I would have uncorked on Ben Roethlisberger and his fake phony apology on television a year too late to Antonio Brown. Classic, classic little Ben. Throw someone in the bus, apologize after it's too late. I got no issue being critical where criticism is warranted. But a guy wants to make a choice on his own life, I got absolutely no issue with it. And again, that's in a vacuum. This is a dude who has played for an organization for a long time that has been lackluster at best in putting him in a situation to succeed. So if we're, and I don't know if the Colts screwed up this time. I know they did a few years ago with Andrew Luck. I know they have in terms of creating an offensive line that isn't Swiss cheese that protects his body. But if we're going to jump to conclusions, which Steve Berline's doing, I like Steve, but if we're going to jump to conclusions, we're going to make broad generalizations about who's to blame with not a lot of information. The history of this thing is to blame the Indianapolis Colts. Be better at your job. Have an owner who's better at his job. Recognize the unicorn. And it's hard to recognize a once-in-a-lifetime talent when you've gotten it twice. You have that level of football talent at the quarterback position, especially in this era. It is going to obscure and eclipse a lot of incompetencies in the coaching department, in the front office department. It was true in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and it's true in Indianapolis, Indiana. It just is. But if you want to broadly jump to a conclusion, conclude this. The Colts are poorly run. The Colts have not done a good job with their medical staff and with their front office at protecting Andrew Luck. He is a gem. He is a jewel. He is a lottery ticket. He's the golden ticket. And you screwed it up and you're the one that's to blame. It's not fair to the fans. Life ain't fair. I don't have all the details, but there are scenarios where his retirement is defensible. And it begins and ends with him waking up and deciding he wants to retire. And by the way, talking into a microphone for a living, or being a politician or being an actor or something that isn't physically taxing, you can do whatever you want. The guy plays a violent game. And I don't want to bring this too much into the conversation because it has not been, for the moment at least, linked to his decision. But how much do we talk about guys who have hurt themselves to the point where the pain forced them from the game? How much have we talked about the reality of what playing football can do to your brain? This is not an easy game to play. There is a physical toll that is real for a lot of the people who play it. I don't know if that is part of the context of the decision making for Andrew Luck, but I'm sure as hell not going to judge him. All right, 1-800-636-8686 is the phone number. I'm Bill Ryder. I'm filling in for Jim here on the Jim Rome Show just today. Jim is back tomorrow. Sports writer on Twitter, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Let's go to the phone lines. Brian in Portland, Oregon, what is going on? You are on the Jim Rome Show, my friend.
Yeah, I was going to touch on the whole corporate loyalty, team loyalty aspect, but also this idea that he is an honor worker or, you know, who his shoulders hurt, his knee hurts, why is he retiring? But I think the deeper conspiracy is maybe something around a bigger injury like CTE. I think it's a really bad black war in the NFL right now, and who knows if that's something that's affecting him. He's a smart guy. He went to Stanford. He was an engineer. So maybe that's actually what's going on. But the NFL made a deal where he wouldn't bring that up as a reason because that's a huge mark on their reputation right now, kind of brushing that under the rug. Just how much brain damage and, you know, how much long-term impact concussions. And
it's okay. It's okay. You know what? I got to tell you, the first time that I host in a radio show, I talk a little fast. Okay, just take a breath. It's all good. Actually, the first time I hosted a radio show, I was doing it remotely, or second time. I didn't know that we were still on the air. I thought we took a break, and I said a bunch of crazy stuff about a colleague. And the producer was like, that was magic! Luckily, no one heard it. So that's a life lesson. Those of you young broadcasters, the microphone is always on. I didn't want to react immediately when I got the news on Saturday. I didn't want to react immediately on Sunday, just in my own sort of mind's eye. I wanted to think about it. But my initial thought, and it has been reinforced by a couple nights' sleep, texting some people who played in the NFL and just thinking it through, is real simple. I do not blame Andrew Luck. I might blame the NFL, the game of football. I do blame the Colts in terms of how and why this talented cornerback is stepping away from the game, not at the age of 30 yet, $24 million guaranteed, and a chance at a Super Bowl. And if that's CTE, if that's the pain of the game, if that's just he does not interest him anymore, the juice for him was not worth the squeeze, I get it, dude, and I appreciate the call. 1-800-636-8686. How many we've run? What, two people today? You know what? I'm a big believer in radio, just being honest.
It's two for me.
Yeah, and it feels good, which is wrong. It's a character flaw, but I embrace it. I embrace my character flaws. I got some athletes I can't stand that I take gratuitous shots at, especially on this show because it matters, and some of you get mad. But if Chris Paul's the biggest phony in sports and I get a microphone like this one, I'm going to say it like I just did. Why? Because it's true, and I embrace my flaws. Is it petty? Is it small? Hell yes, it is. And the same is true of running those guys. All right, let's do one more call. Derek in Vancouver Island, what is going on, my man? You're on the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. First-time caller.
Welcome in.
I just want to say that guy from Atlanta, man, I hate that because we look at these athletes, like we put them on a pedestal, right? But Andrew Luck is just a person like him, just like I am, you know. He may make $30 million a year, right? But to anybody who's had chronic pain injuries, you know, I've had a slip disc since I was 17. It is not easy, man. You never talk to somebody who once had back pain and that, you know, you always have back pain, you know. So it's like good for him. I'm sure he's got over $100 million in the bank. He's a smart man. It's retire while you're on top, right? Because I'm only 27 years old and already my body is, you know, I have a lot of pain. So I stopped playing football when I did, right? So good for him. You know, it's hard to let it go, but I honor him for doing that, right? Whether he did, you know, it's good for him.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing on the personal stuff, being in pain. No fun. He does, but you're right. He does have, I think it's quite literally $100 million in the bank, or at least $100 million earned, just from his NFL contracts. That doesn't include, and that's the thing. We make these decisions, we make these judgments. Some of you can. I can't imagine having $1 million in the bank. A million. $50, $60, $80 million? At a certain point, you're going to wake up and do with your life whatever you want to do with it. Andrew Luck is newly married, wants to have a family, wants to travel. You know what that sounds like to me? A pretty great life. I wish the guy was playing football. And the NFL is must-watch TV for me. It is for all of us. But Andrew Luck in particular on Red Zone, when I'm watching, I'm sort of choosing my games. Andrew Luck, and there's a lot of them. I get it, there's a lot playing behind the shield. But he is mesmerizing television. He's mesmerizing football. His talent alone is an incredible thing. His presence, and there are few guys this is true of, his presence on a football team makes that team a contender. End of story. End of story. And so his exit is huge news, and it is a bummer. It's also just the way it goes, and I think good for him. Yeah, I was going to say not. That was too far. It's not too far. Good for him. Live your life, man. Do what you want to do. 1-800-636-8686. The Atlanta Braves are the hottest team right now in baseball. They've won 8 in a row. They are separating themselves from the field in the NFL, separate from, of course, the Dodgers. They made some bold moves at the deadline. They actually haven't worked those two guys they got in their bullpen. We're going to get a perspective from the architect behind this team. Alex Anthopoulos is going to join me on the program, the Braves GM, in just a moment here on the Jim Rome Show.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. Dell's Labor Day sale for small business can save you up to 40% on select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get free shipping on everything. Visit Dell.com/business deals or call 877-BUY-DELL. Bill Ryder with you on the Jim Rome Show, filling in for Jim. The Atlanta Braves have won 8 straight games, just swept the Mets over the weekend. And the architect of that team, the general manager, Alex Anthopoulos, joins me right now on the Jim Rome Show. Alex, thanks for making time.
No problem. Glad to be on.
So you guys are playing really well at the right time of year. What have you seen from your ball club over this recent stretch that has made you guys pretty dominant?
Yeah, we've had some good breaks along the way. Obviously, every club has guys that go down and have injuries, but just with some of these games, even the Mets series, you know, two really tight games, the Friday and Sunday game, and for us to pull it out is huge. But I think just overall, maybe the non-stars, I know Donaldson had the two home runs on Sunday, but some of the other guys that are maybe at the bottom of the lineup have come through with some big defensive plays, big hits. The bullpen has been huge for us as well, and the rotation has really solidified things. But we lost a bunch of our everyday bats in the lineup, and we've had to have some change and some turnover, and guys that have come in have really stepped up for us. But it's really been a collective 25 and some big hits, big plays, tight games, and the way the NL East is going with four teams over 500 at this point, it's going to be a grind all the way to the end.
Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos here on the Jim Rome Show. Alex, we got about 30 games left. You know, we're coming down. We got some baseball left, but we're getting to the nitty gritty. We're getting to the end. How much do you, in a game that's based largely on sample size, how much do you believe or disbelieve the idea that momentum at the end of the regular season for playoff bound teams is significant for what happens in the playoffs?
You know, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I probably would have said I think it's important and you're peaking and heading into the postseason and so on. You know, I just remember 2017 in L.A. We went to the World Series. We won 100-plus games, and I believe it was the month of September. I think we lost 10 in a row, which was unbelievable for how good that team was, and we still got to the World Series. So I think you can look at all kinds of teams that have been great during the season, and you get some bad breaks in the playoffs or guys get hot, cold. I think of the Mariners that year. They set the win total. I think they had 116, and they got eliminated, or some of those great teams that Philadelphia had with Halliday and Lee and all those guys, and they got eliminated. So I think anything can happen. I think once the postseason comes around, you're basically starting from scratch. Everyone earned their way there. And it's who decides to get hot right at that time.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And obviously, by that logic, roster construction matters. And even if guys haven't played well, you know, over the course of the end of that regular season, if they can just figure it out in the playoffs, that can help. You guys have been winning a lot of baseball games. Even though two of the big names you brought in at the deadline, and Shane Green and Mark Melanson, haven't played at the level that you want to, what is your concern level? Just what is your view of those two guys and what you anticipate they can do for your ball club, despite how they played since those trades?
Yes, we brought in three guys, like you said, Melanson and Green being two, and then Chris Martin from the Rangers as well. All three got off to slow starts for us the first, I think, 2 weeks or so. And then since then, they've been fantastic. They've been outstanding. You know, before Sunday's game, I think we had gone 20-plus or 25 innings without having allowed a run out of our bullpen. I think all those guys have really solidified and finally are starting to throw the ball the way they had during the year. And I can't tell you why things they got off to slow starts, whether it's change of teams, expectations, getting settled in, maybe just small sample luck. But long-term, for the remainder of the year at least, you felt like what they did for the first 4 months, there was a good chance to be able to continue to perform at a high level. So we feel pretty good about our bullpen right now, especially with the depth that we have. Having guys like Luke Jackson, who saved a lot of games for us and did a very good job. Now he's available earlier in the game. Anthony Swarzak, you know, for a good chunk of the year was huge for us, and now he's available earlier in the ballgame as well. So I think just our manager now having more options, and even if we're down a run or two, we can still go to – we have that depth now in the bullpen to try to keep a lead. And a lead that the other team has close for a week and hopefully come back.
Yeah, you brought up
because of our bats.
Yeah, you brought up the bullpen. It's been awesome. Mike Soroka's been great. Starting rotation's been reliable. I mean, we'll get into some of these guys. I mean, Ronald Acuna Jr. is such a stud. If we go back 2 years, Alex, when you came into this role, what was the goal? Like, what were you trying to build? What was the long-term plan, and how have you been able, it seems, to be able to pull that off pretty quickly?
Yeah, I think when I took this job, I said it many times, and even throughout last year when we won the division, I think a ton of credit goes to all the administrations that came here before me. I mean, they, as far as I'm concerned, they're the ones that really did the bulk of the work, and they went through the pain of having lost, and guys like, obviously, John Hart, John Coppola, Frank Wren, John Schuerholz. You look at the roster, all their work and the years that they put in, it's all over the place. So then you look at the amateur scouting department, and you look at the player development department. I mean, this organization was in a very good spot. They hadn't won, and I think they had 4 years in a row. being below 500, I think three in a row of losing 90 games, but that was by design. They were very transparent and open about going into a rebuild. So knowing they had come off a down year, I knew there was a lot of talent, and what I didn't want to do was make some changes too fast. And I had actually called three GMs that I know well that had experience that had gone through the same thing being with the new organization, and I asked them for advice, and they all told me the one thing they wish they could go back on was to wait a little longer before they started to move players and make changes. So the goal was to sit back, keep the roster as it was, maybe make some moves and add some guys, but really commit to trying to make everybody better that was here, whether it was from a defensive standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, whether it's pitch mix and so on. Just if we can make everybody on the roster a little better, 5% better, 10% better, and also really emphasize being a strong defensive club. And, you know, obviously things broke for us, but I don't think anyone was surprised with the amount of talent that was here when I first took the job.
Yeah, that advice for patience, Alex Anthopoulos, the Braves GM here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Rutter, that's me filling in. Alex, that's really interesting, that advice to wait. And I know in management circles and in business, people try to do that. But I would imagine, I mean, you're a general manager in Major League Baseball. That is a lot of pressure. That is a huge opportunity. It's one thing to get the advice. It's another thing to follow it. How difficult was it to just make yourself be hands-off at the start of that opportunity?
You know, I think just having done the job before, I did it for 6 years in Toronto, and, you know, it was different there. I was an AGM there. I knew the staff. I knew the players. I knew the organization inside and out. And though I had experience in the job, I didn't have any experience coming into a new organization where I didn't really know anybody at all, from the employees to the players. So, like anything, you want to have success, and, you know, it's not certainly not about me or anything like that at all. My job is to come in here and do the role and hopefully put the team in a position to win. So from that standpoint, I just felt like I didn't have anything to go to. I knew in terms of the day-to-day operations of the role and what needed to be done and things like that, no problem on that end. That wasn't going to be new for me. But just trying to navigate through all those things, I think having talked to those GMs, and all three of them gave me transactions that they did early on in their time, and they said, you know what, and they made a lot of sense. And I know these three guys pointed out the moves they made that were mistakes. They didn't know the players well enough. They didn't know the evaluations. They didn't know the data well enough, and that was just part of being new. And I think it's easy to try to come in and maybe you want to put your own stamp on things or make changes, and I just didn't view it that way. I just viewed it as I'm trying to win, hopefully put the organization in a good spot. They had already done a tremendous amount of work here. They just needed a little bit more time to get over the hump.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So what we have some really young, talented guys around the majors, and I'll point to the easy example. Cody Bellinger was already a pretty good player for the Dodgers, but the leap that he made this year is obviously very significant. With your own ball club, Ronald Acuna Jr., dude's hitting .292. His on-base percentage is .375. He's hit, what, 36 home runs. He's driven in a ton of guys. And maybe the number that jumps off the screen, the page the most, Alex, he does not turn 22 years old until December. What can this player's upside be? What is his potential over the course of his career?
Yeah, I mean, it's sky's the limit, right? And I think you could say that about a lot of players. And I know there's a lot of talk about him and the accolades, which he deserves all of them. And again, I was in LA for 2 years, 2016, 2017. I got to see Corey Seager come up his first full season, and Cody Bellinger. And they were the two best young position players I had seen. And then I got to Atlanta, and not to take anything away from those guys, because those guys are perennial MVP candidates as well. But, you know, Ronald, seeing him at a young age, and really, you know, he's as good as I've seen. And the change for him really came right after the All-Star break last year. He came up initially early in the year, late April, early May. First 2-3 weeks did very well. Then he cooled off for a while. And then he made a change to his swing right after the All-Star break. And then the last 2 months and into the playoffs, he was the player that you're seeing today. The big thing with him is work ethic, humility, and, you know, knock on wood, he's been a guy that's been able to post and go out there day in and day out. So if he can stay healthy, loves the game, great teammate, I think he can go down as one of the best players that's ever been part of the Braves. And that's certainly saying a lot when you look at all the Hall of Famers that have come through this organization.
Alex Anthopoulos, the GM of the Atlanta Braves here on the show. Alex, you've mentioned your time with the Dodgers a few times here in the conversation, and I was doing Dodgers radio at the time, and I can remember, if you included Andrew Friedman, who's the president of, and is the president of baseball operations, if you included Farhan Zaidi, who was the GM and is now the GM in Oakland, what, there were 7, 8, 9 guys who were current or former general managers as a part of that front office, which felt like a pretty bold move. A lot of times people don't want to surround themselves with folks who could, in theory, compete with them. How did that shape that Dodgers organization? How did that shape just your view as you've come now to Atlanta to do this job?
Yeah, I mean, when I left Toronto, I didn't know what was next. I didn't know what to expect. I knew that wherever I was going to end up next in baseball, I wanted to go somewhere where I could get better and learn. And I was really fortunate at the time that I got some phone calls. And I was able to, you know, really for me, it came down to the Astros and the Dodgers, which were, you know, both organizations I respected a ton, the front offices I respected a ton. And I just thought, wow, if I get a chance, one, I was flattered that I had an opportunity to go work in both spots, but just figured, well, I really have a chance to get better and learn being there. And it's rare after 6 years of being a GM that you take a step back like that and you get to go somewhere and work with some people you really admire that you started to compete with. So at the end of the day, you know, I knew the front office guys in LA a little bit more, and that ultimately made the choice for me. And but you know, going there, that was part of the appeal, the fact that there was so many guys there with experience. Just a place that I knew where there was a high probability that I could get better and learn, and that was really the goal. And obviously, being in a great place to work and so on. So I didn't expect to move on after 2 years. I moved my family out to LA. I thought I would be there for a long period of time. You know, the job in Atlanta opened up. I came out here. I was beyond blown away and impressed just with the people I would work with and for, and things worked out. But there's no doubt, I think being in LA for the 2 years, I learned a ton. In an ideal world, I would have had 4 or 5, but I'm really grateful for the time that I got there and what I was able to learn.
Alex, last one for you. I don't think it's going on a limb to say that the National League goes through the Los Angeles Dodgers. They've made 2 consecutive World Series. They are very, very good this year. I would say that they're the best team in baseball, but they're certainly in the conversation with the Astros, maybe the Yankees. Do you see an advantage in your time in Los Angeles, your insight on that organization, given the fact that your Braves team may have to beat them in a series to get where you want to go?
No, I don't. I mean, if anything, you look at just speaking that organization, and obviously I know Farhan Zaidi moved on, but I competed with Andrew Friedman when he was with the Rays. I mean, I don't think it's a surprise. You look at, he did it with small payrolls. He's doing it now with big payrolls. He's as good a GM, president of baseball ops, as you're going to find in the game. So they do a great job. Stan Kasten's been there, obviously, as well, and he had great success with the Braves. So they're set up very well there. And they've got great talent and great players. So anybody can win come playoff time. We've seen that from wild cards winning the World Series and so on. But I think any information that you have, it changes so fast. It's been 2 years now that it's been removed. Maybe there would have been a slight advantage to having a little information a year ago, but the roster changes, players change. And you just know that they have a talented club. They're going to be very prepared. They do everything they can to put themselves in the best position to win. So in a short series, anything can happen. Teams get hot, but there's no doubt they've earned that right. They've been in the World Series back-to-back years. And, you know, from our standpoint, we're just worried about the NL East. We just want to get in at this point and worry about that, and we're not even getting ahead of ourselves and even assuming playoffs.
Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos, congratulations on your success. Good luck going forward, and thank you for being here on the Jim Rome Show.
Glad to do it.
Thank you. Alex Anthopoulos on the program. Braves team is real good. And they, under that gentleman's stewardship, have been pretty impressive pretty quickly. 1-800-636-8686. Your chance, at least today, with me, Bill Rutter, filling in to give your take on Andrew Luck and his exit from the National Football League. We'll take your calls here on the Jim Rome Show in a moment after this CBS Sports Radio update. Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. I am Bill Ryder, and I am filling in just today. Jim is back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. It's time to answer your Ask the Pros question, where you, the clones, get to submit a question at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Bill, who is your way too early pick to win the NBA Finals, given how open the league is this year? Thanks, Charles in Cleveland. All right, Charles, so I got two answers for you. The first answer is my way too early pick against the field is the Clippers. I don't buy the Lakers. In fact, I didn't really buy the Lakers before, but when they brought in Dwight Howard, who's a Hall of Fame malignancy, I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame player. I know he could probably get into the one, but when they brought him in, even though they can cut him, even though it's a very, very team-friendly deal, I just decided that they don't know what they're doing. I love the Clippers. If Kawhi Leonard is healthy, if Paul George is healthy, and if you look a little closely, after the All-Star break, PG has, over the course of his career, tended to really fall off a cliff a little bit in terms of performance. But they were so scrappy and so good last year. They are so deep. They have a very impressive coach. Jerry West is an incredible culture builder. The Clippers in a vacuum. But my actual hard-earned money, when I went to Vegas, I got the Jazz at 15-1. Not saying that I think Utah is going to win the NBA championship, but I do think it's fairly wide open. And I think as you sort of calculate and try to look at who you buy and who you believe in, at least if you're looking at the Western Conference, we have never, in the course of these four gentlemen's seasons, we have never seen LeBron James, it's mostly not LeBron, but between LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George, we have never had all four of those guys play a complete season in the same season. So I think it's in the realm of possibilities. Obviously, LeBron's getting older, got hurt last year. At least one of those guys, history tells us, will not play a complete season, maybe unavailable when it matters. So it takes one of those two LA teams out if history is any guide. I really like Utah. I really like Denver. I think Portland's interesting. I don't buy Houston particularly on the Westbrook-Harden combo, but I could be 100% wrong. It's going to be interesting at a minimum to watch. Milwaukee is really good. I think Boston's interesting. And Philly, especially if Ben Simmons really has worked on a three-point shot, could be dynamic. There's a lot of teams in there, right? Give me the Clippers. But if you want to bet some money, if you're going to Vegas, if you want to put some scratch down, maybe you've had a little bit to drink and you want to go a little aggressive like I did, I think Utah at 15-1. I'm not sure where their line is now, is a really interesting number. Thank you. Thank you for the question. 1-800-636-8686. RomeandHaveATake.com at Jim Rome. JimRome.com. I'm on there too. Sports Writer Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Thank you to Adam Hawk, Evan DeLauro. Appreciate Garrett Ritt doing his thing. Thank you to my guy Stuart Kovacs back in New York City helping out, and Antonio Grillo also helping out in New York City. Been a lot of fun. Love filling in. I've done a lot of these shows over the last 3 or 4 months. It's been really cool having the opportunity to do this. We obviously spent a huge, almost the entire show talking about Andrew Luck and his retirement and his exit from the game of football. And it is still not quite 48 hours later. It is still a stunner. It is a difficult thing to process. I'm sure Jim will hit it tomorrow. I'm going to hit it tomorrow on my own show, Rider Than You, 6 to 10 Eastern, 3 to 7 Pacific, here on CBS Sports Radio. And I keep going back to Andrew Luck's words and his perspective, including when he came to that microphone and made that announcement, talking about the mental toll for him his injuries have taken.
For the last 4 years or so, I've been in this cycle of injury, pain, rehab, injury, pain, rehab. And it's been unceasing, unrelenting, both in season, both in and off season. And I felt stuck in it. And the only way I see out is to no longer play football. It's taken my joy of this game away.
Injury, pain, rehab. Injury, pain, rehab. The only way out of injury, pain, rehab is to quit football. Do you know another way out of injury, pain, rehab? Is to play without injury, without pain, or without a rehab. The guy was hurt. I mean, clearly, and we'll get the information eventually. I'm sure it'll come out in the next 24, 48 hours. A little bit of daylight. It'll become less and less nebulous as time goes on. But he didn't say injury, pain, rehab, play. He said injury, pain, rehab. The dude clearly in pain, was probably injured, and almost certainly was looking at a rehab scenario. This is the same Colts team that a couple years ago told us everything was fine, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about. Andrew looks fine. Andrew looks out for the season. The same story was circling back again. So if your inclination, if you're in Indianapolis, I get it, your emotional reaction, your response is to say he let his team down, I would, if I'm you, at a minimum, wait until you know if maybe he wasn't about to miss another year. If the guy knew he wasn't playing in 2019, if Jacoby Brissett was the starter, and that's been true for 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, he's not letting his team down. They have a year's notice on his retirement. You didn't get the notice. I didn't get the notice. But if the real announcement, if one way or another there was going to be an announcement that Andrew Luck wasn't playing this year, he didn't betray his team, he didn't let his team down. They knew they had a year without him, and he gave them that kind of notice. And I'm a betting man, as I discussed with the Utah Jazz. My money would be on that. And going further in his emotional, you know, I'm so used to Andrew Luck being goofy and funny and kind of weird and dorky. I like it. I like him. I think he's interesting. And in a moment, obviously, with a very different tone, Andrew Luck talked about, for a little further, what went into the decision to retire.
I've been stuck in this process. I haven't been able to live the life I want to live, taking the joy out of this game. And after 2016, where I played in pain and was unable to regularly practice, I made a vow to myself that I would not go down that path again. I find myself in a similar situation, and the only way forward for me is to remove myself from football in this cycle that I've been in.
I don't get media members, former quarterbacks, coaches, players, you know, just the rest of us, how you can be mad at a guy for not wanting to do something for a living. And that's before you consider the fact that from the Colts, he's made $100 million. From endorsements, it's obviously markedly more. The guy does need the money. He doesn't have to support his family. He's not me and you. Look, if I went home to my wife, well, I'd be divorced. But if I went home to my wife today and said, you know what, I'm out. I'm not going to work. I just want to chill, play tennis, drink beer, play poker, play some more hoops, you know. Feel like it's time to go from 3-on-3 to 5-on-5. My wife would correctly say, we have two children that we support together. What in the hell are you thinking? That is not where Andrew Luck's obligations aren't to his teammates once they stop being his teammates. If Andrew Luck, I would even go further and say, if Andrew Luck's heart isn't in it and he doesn't want to be there, don't fake it. Now, he got, and I'm not mad at Colts fans for this either. I don't think it's the proper reaction, but emotional reactions are rarely the proper reaction. And I understand their heartbreak. He got booed. I mean, those boos are the last thing he's going to hear as a member of the Colts, we think. I don't think he's coming back. And he also discussed what it was like to hear Colts fans, as he walked off the field, raining down their displeasure.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I didn't say I heard the reaction. Yeah, it hurt. I'll be honest, chap. It hurt.
I'm sure it did. And he's entitled to that perspective. I'm not mad at Colts fans for booing Andrew Luck. I don't think it's the wrong thing to do, even if it's not the rational thing to do. You have to weigh these things in the context of the moment. Now, someday Andrew Luck is going to come back, and they're going to retire his number, and they're going to honor him. They're going to put up a statue or not, whatever they're going to do. And if at that moment, if he gets the Brett Favre treatment, which I actually kind of liked, if he gets booed down the line, when cooler heads have prevailed, that's an absolutely different thing. This was a lot of fun. I'm Bill Ryder, sports writer on Twitter, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Most of the time, during the week, Monday to Friday, here on CBS Sports Radio, 6 to 10 at night, 3 to 7 here on the West Coast. Thank you to the guys for making this easy. They are awesome. Thanks to the guys back in New York City. Thank you to Jim for letting me do this. It is, and I've said this, but I mean it, it's a rush, it's a thrill, it's a career high. I was a clone, so to be sitting here is really, really cool. Jim is back tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Thank you for hanging out. This is the Jim Rome Show.